lashing out at her husband.
"So, home from the wars. Oh, would to God you died there, brought down by that great soldier, my husband, long ago. And how you used to boast, year in, year out, that you were the better man than fighting Menelaus, in power, arm, and spear. So, why not go back now, hurl your challenge at Menelaus, dear to Ares, fight it out together, man to man, again? Wait. Take my advice, and call a halt right here. No more battling with fiery-haired Menelaus, pitting strength against strength in single combat. Madness! He just might impale you on his spear."
But Paris replied at once to Helen's challenge.
"No more, dear one, don't rake me with your taunts, myself and all my courage.
This time, true, Menelaus has won the day, thanks to Athena. I'll bring him down tomorrow. Even we have gods who battle on our side.
But come, let's go to bed. Let's lose ourselves in love. Never has longing for you overwhelmed me so, no.
Not even then, I tell you, that first time when I swept you up from the lovely hills of Lacedaemon, sailed you off and away in the racing deep-sea ships, and we went and locked in love on Rocky Island.
That was nothing to how I hunger for you now. Irresistible longing lays me low."
He led the way to bed. His wife went with him. And now, while the two made love in the large carved bed, Menelaus stalked like a wild beast up and down the lines. Where could he catch a glimpse of magnificent Paris? Not a single Trojan, none of their famous allies, could point out Paris to battle-hungry Menelaus. Not that they would hide him out of friendship. Even if someone saw him, all of them hated him like death, black death. But Marshal Agamemnon called out to the armies,
"Hear me now, you Trojans, Dardans, Trojan allies. Clearly, victory goes to Menelaus, dear to Ares. You must surrender Helen and all her treasure with her, at once, and pay us reparations fair and fitting, a price to inspire generations still to come." So Atreides demanded. His armies roared assent.
As the Achaeans and Trojans wondered what was coming next, Hera, bent on Troy's destruction, coaxed Zeus into breaking the temporary truce between the armies. So Zeus launched Athena, already poised for action. Down she went among the Trojan columns, seeking out the archer Pandarus. Halting beside him, she let fly her challenge. "Let me tempt you. You with your archer's skill. Have you the daring to wing an arrow at Menelaus? Just think what thanks, what fame you'll win in the eyes of all the Trojans." So Athena fired the fool's heart inside him. Then Pandarus shot an arrow at Menelaus, a shaft of black pain. Though it struck him in the chest, it only grazed his flesh, but the action was enough to break the truce. While the expert healer Machaon tended to Menelaus's wound, on the Trojans came, columns armed for assault, and again the Argives donned their gear and roused their lust for war.
As a heavy surf assaults some roaring coast, piling breaker on breaker whipped by the west wind, and out on the open sea a crest first rears its head, then pounds down on the shore with hoarse rumbling thunder, and in come more shouldering crests, arching up and breaking against some rocky spit, exploding salt foam to the skies. So wave on wave they came, Achaean battalions ceaseless, surging on to war. Each captain ordered his men, and the ranks moved on in silence. You'd never think so many troops could march, holding their voices in their chests, all silence, fearing their chiefs, who called out clear commands, and the burnished, blazoned armour round their bodies flared the formations trampling on. But not the Trojans, no. Like flocks of sheep in a wealthy rancher's steadings, thousands crowding to have their white milk drained, bleating non-stop when they hear their crying lambs, So the shouts rose up from the long Trojan lines, and not one cry, no common voice to bind them all together, their tongues mixed and clashed, their men hailed from so many far-flung countries. Ares drove them, fiery-eyed Athena drove the Argives, and terror and rout and relentless strife stormed too, sister of man-slaughtering Ares. Ares, comrade in arms, strife. Only a slight thing when she first rears her head, but her head soon hits the sky as she strides across the earth. Now strife hurled down the leveller hate amidst both sides, wading into the onslaught, flooding men with pain. At last the armies clashed at one strategic point. They slammed their shields together. Pike scraped pike with the grappling strength of fighters armed in bronze, and their round shields pounded, boss on welded boss, and the sound of struggle roared and rocked the earth. Screams of men and cries of triumph breaking in one breath, fighters killing, fighters killed, and the ground streamed blood. Wildly, as two winter torrents raging down from the mountains, swirling into a valley, hurl their great waters together, flash floods from the wellsprings plunging down in a gorge, and miles away in the hills a shepherd hears the thunder, so from the grinding armies broke the cries and crash of war. Antilochus was first to kill a Trojan captain, tough on the front lines, Thalysius's son Echepolus. Antilochus thrust first, speared the horsehair helmet right at the ridge, and the bronze spear-point lodged in the man's forehead, smashing through his skull, and the dark came whirling down across his eyes. He toppled down like a tower in the rough assault. As he fell, the enormous Elephenor grabbed his feet. Chalcodon's son, lord of the brave-hearted Abantes, dragged him out from under the spears, rushing madly to strip his gear, but his rush was short-lived. Just as he dragged that corpse, the brave Agenor spied his ribs, bared by his shield as he bent low. Agenor stabbed with a bronze spear and loosed his limbs. His life spirit left him, and over his dead body now the savage work went on, Achaeans and Trojans mauling each other there like wolves, leaping, hurtling into each other, man throttling man. And Telamonian Ajax struck Anthemion's son, the hardy stripling Simoeisius, still unwed. His mother had borne him along the Simoeisius's banks, when she trailed her parents down the slopes of Ida to tend their flocks, and so they called him Simoeisius. But never would he repay his loving parents now for the gift of rearing, his life cut short so soon, brought down by the spear of lion-hearted Ajax. At the first charge, he slashed his right nipple, clean through the shoulder went the brazen point, and down in the dust he fell, like a lithe black poplar, shot up tall and strong in the spreading marshy flats, the trunk trimmed, but its head a shock of branches. A chariot-maker fells it, with shining iron axe, as timber, to bend for handsome chariot wheels, and there it lies, seasoning by the river. So lay Anthemion's son, Simoeisius, cut down by the giant royal Ajax. Antiphus hurled at him. The son of Priam, wearing a gleaming breastplate, let fly through the lines, but his sharp spear missed, and he hit Leucus instead, Odysseus's loyal comrade, gouging his groin as the man hauled off a corpse. It dropped from his hands, and Leucus sprawled across it. Enraged at his friend's death, Odysseus sprang in fury. Helmed in fiery bronze, he ploughed through the front, and charging the enemy, glaring left and right, he hurled his spear, a glinting, brazen streak, and the Trojans gave ground, scattering back, panicking there before his whirling shaft. A direct hit. Odysseus struck Demochoon, Priam's bastard son, come down from Abydos, Priam's racing stables. Incensed for the dead, Odysseus speared him. Straight through one temple and out the other punched the sharp bronze point, and the dark came swirling thick across his eyes. Down he crashed, armour clanging against his chest. And the Trojan front shrank back, glorious Hector too, as the Argives yelled and dragged away the corpses, pushing on, breakneck on. But Lord God Apollo, gazing down from the heights of Pergamus, rose in outrage, crying down at the Trojans, "Up
and at them, you stallion-breaking Trojans. Never give up your lust for war against these Argives. What are their bodies made of, rock or iron, to block your tearing bronze? Stab them, slash their flesh. Achilles, the son of lovely sleek-haired Thetis, the man's not even fighting. No, he wallows in all his heartsick fury by the ships.
So he cried, from far on the city's heights, the awesome god Apollo. But Zeus's daughter Athena spurred the Argives on. Athena, first in glory, third-born of the gods. Whenever she saw some slacker hanging back, as she hurtled through the onset. Now Amarynceus's son Diares. Fate shackled Diares fast, and a jagged rock struck him against his right shin beside the ancle. Pyrrhus, son of Imbrosus, winged it hard and true. The Thracian chief who had sailed across from Enos. The ruthless rock striking the bones and tendons crushed them to pulp. He landed flat on his back, slamming the dust, both arms flung out to his comrades, gasping out his life. Pyrrhus, who heaved the rock, came rushing in and speared him up the navel, his bowels uncoiled, spilling loose on the ground, and the dark came swirling down across his eyes. But Pyrrhus, Aetolian Thoas, speared him as he swerved and sprang away, the lancehead piercing his chest above the nipple, plunged deep into his lung, and Thoas, running up, wrenched the heavy spear from the man's chest, drew his blade, ripped him across the belly, took his life, but he could not strip his armour. Look, there were Pyrrhus's cohorts bunched in a ring, Thracians, topknots waving, clutching their long pikes and rugged, strong and proud as the Trojan Thoas was, they shoved him back. He gave ground, staggering, reeling. And so the two lay stretched in the dust, side by side, a lord of Thrace, a lord of Epeans, armed in bronze, and a ruck of other soldiers died around them. And now, no man who waded into that work could scorn it any longer. Anyone still not speared or stabbed by tearing bronze, who whirled into the heart of all that slaughter. Not even if great Athena led him by the hand, flicking away the weapons hailing down against him. That day, ranks of Trojans, ranks of Achaean fighters, sprawled there, side by side, face down in the dust.
Then Pallas Athena granted Tydeus's son Diomedes strength and daring, so the fighter would shine forth and tower over the Argives and win himself great glory. Inspired by the goddess, Diomedes led the Achaeans in a Trojan rout. Down the plain he stormed like a stream in spate, a routing winter torrent sweeping away the dikes. The tight-piled dikes can't hold it back any longer. Banks shoring the blooming vineyards can't curb its course. A flash flood bursts as the rains from Zeus pour down their power. Acre on acre, the well-dug work of farmers crumbling under it. So, under Tydides' force, the Trojan columns panicked now. No standing their ground, massed, packed as they were. And the next moment, crowds of Trojans would have clambered back inside their city walls, terror-struck by the Argives primed for battle. But Helenus, son of Priam, best of the seers who scan the flight of birds, came striding up to Hector, calling out, "Hector, you go back to the city. Tell our mother to gather all the older noble women together in gray-eyed Athena's shrine. Then offer her gifts, if only she'll hold Diomedes back from the holy city. That wild spearman, that invincible, headlong terror." So he urged, and Hector obeyed his brother.
And now, when Hector reached the Scaean gates and the great oak, the wives and daughters of Troy came rushing up around him, asking about their sons, brothers, friends, and husbands. But Hector told them only, "Pray to the gods." All the Trojan women, one after another, hard sorrows were hanging over many. And soon he came to Priam's palace, that magnificent structure, built wide with porches and colonnades of polished stone. And deep within its walls were 50 sleeping chambers, masoned in smooth, lustrous ashlar, linked in a line, where the sons of Priam slept beside their wedded wives. And facing these, opening out across the inner courtyard, lay the 12 sleeping chambers of Priam's daughters, masoned and roofed in lustrous ashlar, linked in a line, where the sons-in-law of Priam slept beside their wives. And there at the palace Hector's mother met her son, that warm, good-hearted woman, going in with Laodice, the loveliest daughter Hecuba ever bred. His mother clutched his hand and urged him, called his name. "My child, why have you left the bitter fighting? Why have you come home? Look how they wear you out, the sons of Achaea. Curse them, battling round our walls. And that's why your spirit brought you back to Troy, to climb the heights and stretch your arms to Zeus. But wait, I'll bring you some honeyed mellow wine. First, pour out cups to Father Zeus and the other gods. Then refresh yourself, if you'd like to quench your thirst. When a man's exhausted, wine will build his strength, battle-weary as you are, fighting for your people." But Hector shook his head, his helmet flashing. "Don't offer me mellow wine, mother, not now. You'd sap my limbs. I'd lose my nerve for war. And I'd be ashamed to pour a glistening cup to Zeus with unwashed hands. I'm spattered with blood and filth. How could I pray to the Lord of storm and lightning? No, mother, you are the one to pray. Go to Athena's shrine, the queen of plunder. Go with offerings. Gather the older, noble women, and take a robe, the largest, loveliest robe that you can find throughout the royal halls, a gift that far and away you prize most yourself, and spread it out across the sleek-haired goddess's knees. Then promise to sacrifice 12 heifers in her shrine, yearlings never broken. If only she'll pity Troy, the Trojan wives and all our helpless children. If only she'll hold Diomedes back from the holy city, that wild spearman, that invincible, headlong terror. Now, mother, go to the Queen of Plunder's shrine, and I'll go hunt for Paris. Summon him to fight, if the man will hear what I have to say. Let the earth gape and swallow him on the spot. Our great curse Olympian's use let live and grow in him. For Troy and high-hearted Priam and all his sons, that man, if I could see him bound for the house of death, I could say my heart had forgot its wrenching grief." But his mother simply turned away to the palace. She gave her servants orders, and out they strode, to gather the older, noble women through the city. Hecuba went down to a storeroom filled with scent, and there they were, brocaded, beautiful robes, the work of Sidonian women. Magnificent Paris brought those women back himself from Sidon, sailing the open seas on the same long voyage he swept Helen off, her famous father's child. Lifting one from the lot, Hecuba brought it out for great Athena's gift, the largest, loveliest, richly worked, and like a star it glistened, deep beneath the others. Then she made her way with a file of noble women rushing in her train. Once they reached Athena's shrine on the city crest, the beauty, Theano, opened the doors to let them in. Cisseus's daughter, the horseman Antenor's wife, and Athena's priestess, chosen by the Trojans. Then, with a shrill wail, they all stretched their arms to Athena, as Theano, her face radiant, lifting the robe on high, spread it out across the sleek-haired goddess's knees, and prayed to the daughter of mighty father Zeus, "Queen Athena, shield of our city, glory of goddesses, now shatter the spear of Diomedes, that wild man. Hurl him headlong down before the Scaean gates. At once we'll sacrifice 12 heifers in your shrine, yearlings never broken. If only you'll pity Troy, the Trojan wives, and all our helpless children." But Athena refused to hear Theano's prayers, and while they prayed to the daughter of mighty Zeus, Hector approached the halls of Paris, sumptuous halls he built himself with the finest masons of the day, master builders, famed in the fertile land of Troy. They'd raised his sleeping chamber, house and court, adjoining Priam's and Hector's, aloft the city heights. Now Hector, dear to Zeus, strode through the gates, clutching a thrusting lance 11 forearms long. The bronze tip of the weapon shone before him, ringed with a golden hoop to grip the shaft. And there, in the bedroom, Hector came on Paris, polishing, fondling his splendid battle gear, his shield and breastplate, turning over and over his long, curved bow. And there was Helen of Argos, sitting with all the women of the house, directing the rich embroidered work they had in hand. Seeing Paris, Hector raked his brother with insults, stinging taunts. "What on earth are you doing? Oh, how wrong it is, this anger you keep smouldering in your heart. Look, your people dying around the city, the steep walls, dying in arms, and all for you. The battle cries and the fighting flaring up around the citadel. You'd be the first to lash out at another, anywhere, you saw hanging back from this hateful war. Up with you, before all Troy is torched to a cinder here and now." And Paris, magnificent as a god, replied, "Ah, Hector, you criticize me fairly, yes. Nothing unfair, beyond what I deserve. And so I will try to tell you something. Please bear with me. Hear me out. It's not so much from anger or outrage at our people that I keep to my room so long. I only wanted to plunge myself in grief. But just now my wife was bringing me round, her winning words urging me back to battle. And it strikes me, even me, as the better way. Victory shifts, you know, now one man, now another. So come. Wait while I get this war gear on, or you go on ahead and I will follow. I think I can overtake you." Hector, helmet flashing, answered nothing. And Helen spoke to him now, her soft voice welling up. "My dear brother, dear to me, bitch that I am, vicious scheming, horror to freeze the heart. Oh, how I wish that first day my mother brought me into the light, some black whirlwind had rushed me out to the mountains, or into the surf, where the roaring breakers crash and drag, and the waves had swept me off before all this had happened. But since the gods ordained it all, these desperate years, I wish I had been the wife of a better man, someone alive to outrage, the withering scorn of men. This one has no steadiness in his spirit. Not now. He never will. And he's going to reap the fruits of it, I swear. But come in. Rest on this seat with me, dear brother. You were the one hit hardest by the fighting, Hector. You more than all. And all for me, slut that I am. And this blind, mad Paris. Oh, the two of us. Zeus planted a killing doom within us both. So even for generations still unborn, we will live in song." Turning to go, his helmet flashing, tall Hector answered, "Don't ask me to sit beside you here, Helen. Love me as you do, you can't persuade me now. No time for rest. My heart races to help our Trojans. They long for me sorely whenever I am gone. But rouse this fellow, won't you, and let him hurry himself along as well, so he can overtake me before I leave the city. For I must go home, to see my people first, to visit my own dear wife and my baby son. Who knows if I will ever come back to them again, or the deathless gods will strike me down at last at the hands of Argive fighters." A flash of his helmet, and off he strode, and quickly reached his sturdy, well-built house. But white-armed Andromache, Hector could not find her in the halls. She and the boy, and a servant, finely gowned, were standing watch on the tower, sobbing, grieving. When Hector saw no sign of his loyal wife inside, he went to the doorway, stopped and asked the servants, "Come, please, tell me the truth now, women. Where's Andromache gone? To my sister's house? To my brother's wives with their long flowing robes? Or Athena's shrine, where the noble Trojan women gather to win the great grim goddess over?" A busy, willing servant answered quickly, "Hector, seeing you want to know the truth, she hasn't gone to your sister's, brothers' wives, or Athena's shrine where the noble Trojan women gather to win the great grim goddess over. Up to the huge gate tower of Troy she's gone, because she heard our men are so hard-pressed, the Achaean fighters coming on in so much force. She sped to the wall in panic, like a madwoman. The nurse went with her, carrying your child.
At that, Hector spun and rushed from his house. Back by the same way, down the wide, well-paved streets, throughout the city, until he reached the Scaean gates, the last point he would pass to gain the field of battle. There, his warm, generous wife came running up to meet him. Andromache, the daughter of gallant-hearted Eetion, who had lived below Mount Placos, rich with timber, in Thebe, below the peaks, and ruled Cilicia's people. His daughter had married Hector, helmed in bronze. She joined him now, and following in her steps, a servant, holding the boy against her breast, in the first flush of life, only a baby, Hector's son, the darling of his eyes, and radiant as a star. Hector would always call the boy Scamandrius. Townsmen called him Astyanax, lord of the city, since Hector was the lone defence of Troy. The great man of war breaking into a broad smile, his gaze fixed on his son, in silence. Andromache, pressing close beside him and weeping freely now, clung to his hand, urged him, called him.
"Reckless one, my Hector, your own fiery courage will destroy you. Have you no pity for him, our helpless son, or me, and the destiny that weighs me down? Your widow now, so soon. Yes, soon they will kill you off, all the Achaean forces massed for assault, and then, bereft of you, better for me to sink beneath the earth. What other warmth, what comforts left for me, once you have met your doom? Nothing but torment. I have lost my father. Mother's gone as well. Father, the brilliant Achilles laid him low when he stormed Cilicia's city filled with people, Thebe with her towering gates. He killed Eetion. Not that he stripped his gear, in some respect at least, for he burned his corpse in all his blazoned bronze, then heaped a grave mound high above the ashes, and nymphs of the mountain planted elms around it, daughters of Zeus whose shield is storm and thunder. And the seven brothers I had within our halls, all in the same day went down to the house of death. The great godlike runner Achilles butchered them all, tending their shambling oxen, shining flocks. And mother, who ruled under the timber line of woody Placos once, he no sooner hailed her here with his other plunder than he took a priceless ransom, set her free, and home she went to her father's royal halls, where Artemis, showering arrows, shot her down. You, Hector, you are my father now, my noble mother, a brother, too, and you are my husband, young and warm and strong. Pity me, please. Take your stand on the rampart here, before you orphan your son and make your wife a widow. Draw your armies up where the wild fig tree stands, there, where the city lies most open to assault, the walls lower, easily overrun. 3 times they have tried that point, hoping to storm Troy. Their best fighters, led by the great and little Ajax, famous Idomeneus, Atreus's sons, valiant Diomedes. Perhaps a skilled prophet revealed the spot, or their own fury whips them on to attack.
And tall Hector nodded, his helmet flashing. All this weighs on my mind too, dear woman, that I would die of shame to face the men of Troy and the Trojan women trading their long robes if I would shrink from battle now, a coward. Nor does the spirit urge me on that way. I've learned it all too well, to stand up bravely, always to fight in the front ranks of Trojan soldiers, winning my father great glory, glory for myself. For in my heart and soul I also know this well. The day will come when sacred Troy must die. Priam must die, and all his people with him. Priam, who holds the strong ash spear. Even so,
It is less the pain of the Trojans still to come that weighs me down, not even of Hecuba herself or King Priam, or the thought that my own brothers in all their numbers, all their gallant courage may tumble in the dust, crushed by enemies. That is nothing, nothing, beside your agony, when some brazen Argive hales you off in tears, wrenching away your day of light and freedom. Then far off in the land of Argos you must live, labouring at a loom, at another woman's beck and call, fetching water at some spring, Messeus or Hipparia, resisting it all the way, the rough yoke of necessity at your neck. And a man may say, who sees you screaming tears, there is the wife of Hector, the bravest fighter they could field, those stallion-breaking Trojans, long ago when men fought for Troy. So he will say, and the fresh grief will swell your heart once more, widowed, robbed of the one man strong enough to fight off your day of slavery. No, no, let the earth come piling over my dead body before I hear your cries, I hear you dragged away. In the same breath, shining Hector reached down for his son, but the boy recoiled, cringing against his nurse's full breast, screaming out at the sight of his own father, terrified by the flashing bronze, the horsehair crest, the great ridge of the helmet nodding, bristling terror. So it struck his eyes. And his loving father laughed. His mother laughed as well. And glorious Hector, quickly lifting the helmet from his head, set it down on the ground, fiery in the sunlight. And raising his son, he kissed him, tossed him in his arms, lifting a prayer to Zeus and the other deathless gods. Zeus, all you immortals, grant this boy, my son, may be like me, first in glory among the Trojans, strong and brave like me, and rule all Troy in power, and one day let them say, he is a better man than his father. When he comes home from battle bearing the bloody gear of the mortal enemy he has killed in war, a joy to his mother's heart. So Hector prayed, and placed his son in the arms of his loving wife. Andromache pressed the child to her scented breast, smiling through her tears. Her husband noticed, and filled with pity now, Hector stroked her gently, trying to reassure her, repeating her name. Andromache, dear one, why so desperate? Why so much grief for me? No man will hurl me down to death against my fate. And fate? No one alive has ever escaped it, neither brave man nor coward, I tell you. It's born with us the day that we are born. So, please, go home, tend to your own tasks, the distaff and the loom, and keep the women working hard as well. As for the fighting, men will see to that, all who were born in Troy, but I most of all. Hector, a flash in arms, took up his horsehair-crested helmet once again, and his loving wife went home, turning, glancing back again and again, and weeping live warm tears. She quickly reached the sturdy house of Hector, man-killing Hector, and found her women gathered there inside, and stirred them all to a high pitch of mourning. So, in his house, they raised the dirges for the dead, for Hector, still alive, his people were so convinced that never again would he come home from battle, never escape the Argives' rage and bloody hands. Nor did Paris linger long in his vaulted halls. Soon as he buckled on his elegant, gleaming bronze, he rushed through Troy, sure in his racing stride. As a stallion, full-fed at the manger, stalled too long, breaking free of his tether, gallops down the plain, out for his favourite plunge in a river's cool currents, thundering in his pride, his head flung back, his mane streaming over his shoulders, sure and sleek in his glory, knees racing him on to the fields and stallion haunts he loves. So down from Pergamus heights came Paris, son of Priam, glittering in his armour like the sun astride the skies, exultant, laughing aloud, his fast feet sped him on. Quickly he overtook his brother, noble Hector, still lingering, slow to turn from the spot
where he had just confided in his wife. Magnificent Paris spoke first. "Dear brother, look at me, holding you back in all your speed, dragging my feet, coming to you so late, and you told me to be quick." A flash of his helmet as Hector shot back. "Impossible, man. How could anyone fair and just underrate your work in battle? You're a good soldier, but you hang back of your own accord, refuse to fight. And that's why the heart inside me aches when I hear our Trojans heap contempt on you, the men who bear such struggles, all for you. Come, now for attack. We'll set all this to rights. Some day, if Zeus will ever let us raise the wine bowl of freedom high in our halls, high to the gods of cloud and sky who live forever, once we drive these Argives geared for battle out of Troy."
Vaunting, a flash in arms, Hector swept through the gates with his brother Paris keeping pace beside him. Both men bent on combat. On they fought like wind when a god sends down some welcome blast to sailors, desperate for it, worked to death at the polished oars, beating the heavy seas, their arms slack with the labor. So welcome that brace of men appeared to the Trojans, desperate for their captains. Rampaging Trojans, on they fought, till night came on at last. Now both sides yielded to night, and all withdrew from the fighting. The Trojans back within the walls of their city, the Achaeans back to their beaked ships. The next day, the Trojans and Achaeans agreed to a day-long truce and buried their dead. Then, taking the sound advice of Nestor, the Achaeans quickly built a looming rampart, a landward wall to protect the ships and troops, with gateways to open a path for driving chariots through. And just outside the wall, the men dug an enormous trench, broad and deep, and drove sharp stakes to guard it. When dawn came the next morning, Zeus was determined to fulfill his promise to Thetis to hand the Trojans victory while Achilles raged apart. As the two armies clashed at one strategic point, the thunder of struggle roared and rocked the earth. Screams of men and cries of triumph breaking in one breath, fighters killing, fighters killed, and the ground streamed blood. Then Father Zeus held out his sacred golden scales. In them he placed two fates of death that lays men low, one for the Trojan horsemen, one for the Argives armed in bronze. And gripping the beam mid-haft, the father raised it high, and down went Achaea's day of doom, Achaea's fate, as the Trojans' fate went lifting towards the sky. Now Hector led the Trojans in an Argive rout. All day long they drove the Achaeans back across the Scamander Plain, forcing them to take refuge behind the wall that protected all the ships. Now down in the ocean sank the fiery light of day, drawing the dark night across the grain-giving earth. For the men of Troy the day went down against their will, but not the Argives. What a blessing! How they prayed for nightfall coming on across their lines. And Hector, confident of victory the next day, ordered the Trojans to make their camp across the Scamander Plain, in full view of the Achaeans. The Trojans quickly brought out rations from the city, heaped the firewood high, and up from the plain the wind swept smoke, the sweetness and the savor swirling up the skies.
And so their spirits soared, as they took positions down the passageways of battle all night long, and the watchfires blazed among them. Hundreds strong, as stars in the night sky glittering round the moon's brilliance blaze in all their glory, when the air falls to a sudden windless calm, all the lookout peaks stand out, and the jutting cliffs, and the steep ravines, and down from the high heavens bursts the boundless bright air, and all the stars shine clear, and the shepherd's heart exults. So many fires burned between the ships and the Xanthus's whirling rapids, set by the men of Troy, bright against their walls. A 1,000 fires were burning there on the plain, and beside each fire sat 50 fighting men, poised in the leaping blaze, and champing oats and glistening barley. Stationed by their chariots, stallions waited for dawn to mount her glowing throne. So the Trojans held their watch that night, but not the Achaeans. God sent panic seized them, comrade of blood-curdling rout. All their best was struck by grief too much to bear. As crosswinds chopped the sea where the fish swarm, the north wind and the west wind, blasting out of Thrace, in sudden lightning attack, wave on blacker wave, cresting, heaving a tangled mass of seaweed out along the surf, so the Achaeans' hearts were torn inside their chests. Distraught with the rising anguish, Atreus's son went ranging back and forth, commanding heralds to sound out loud and clear, and call the men to muster, each by name. But no loud outcry now. The king himself pitched in with the lead heralds, summoning troops. They grouped on the meeting grounds, morale broken. Lord Marshal Agamemnon rose up in their midst, streaming tears, like a dark spring running down some desolate rock face, its shaded currents flowing. So, with a deep groan, the king addressed his armies. "Friends, lords of the Argives, all my captains, Cronus's son has entangled me in madness, blinding ruin. Zeus is a harsh, cruel god. He vowed to me long ago, he bowed his head, that I should never embark for home till I had brought the walls of Ilium crashing down. But now I see he only plotted brutal treachery. Now he commands me back to Argos, in disgrace, whole regiments of my men destroyed in battle. So it must please his overweening heart, who knows? Father Zeus has lopped the crowns of 1,000 cities, true, and Zeus will lop still more. His power is too great. So come, follow my orders. Obey me, all you Argives. Cut and run. Sail home to the fatherland we love. We'll never take the broad streets of Troy. Silence held them all, struck dumb by his orders. A long while they said nothing. Spirits dashed. Finally, Diomedes, lord of the war cry, broke forth.
"Atrides, I will be first to oppose you in your folly, here in assembly, king, where it's the custom. Spare me your anger, my courage. Mine was the first you mocked among the Argives, branding me a coward, a poor soldier." "Yes, well, they know all about that, the Argives, young and old. But you, the son of Cronus, with Cronus's twisting ways, gave you gifts by halves. With that royal scepter, the father gave you honour beyond all other men alive. But he never gave you courage, the greatest power of all."
"Desperate man! So certain are you, the sons of Achaea are cowards, poor soldiers, just because you say so?
Desert. If your spirit drives you to sail home, then sail away, my king. The sea lanes are clear. There are your ships of war, crowded down the surf, those that followed you from Mycenae, your own proud armada. But the rest of the long-haired Achaeans will hold out, right here, until we've plundered Troy. And they, if they go running home to the land they love, then the two of us, I and Sthenelus here, will fight our way to the fixed doom of Troy. Never forget, we all sailed here with God."
And all the Achaeans shouted their assent, stirred by the stallion-breaking Diomedes' challenge. But Nestor, the old driver, rose and spoke at once.
"Few can match your power in battle, Diomedes, and in council you excel all men your age. So no one could make light of your proposals, not the whole army. Who could contradict you? But you don't press on and reach a useful end. How young you are! Why, you could be my son, my youngest born at that. Though you urge our kings with cool, clear sense, what you've said is right. But it's my turn now, Diomedes. I think I can claim to have some years on you, so I must speak up and drive the matter home. And no one will heap contempt on what I say, not even mighty Agamemnon. Lost to the clan, lost to the hearth, lost to the old ways, that one who lusts for all the horrors of war with his own people. But now, I say, let us give way to the dark night. Set out the evening meal. Sentries take up posts, squads fronting the trench we dug outside the rampart. That's the command I give the younger fighters. Then, Atrides, lead the way. You are the greatest king. Spread out a feast for all your senior chiefs. That is your duty, a service that becomes you. Your shelters overflow with the wine Achaean ships bring in from Thrace, daily down the seas brought back. Grand hospitality is yours, you rule so many men. Come, gather us all, and we will heed that man who gives the best advice. That's what they need, I tell you. All the Achaeans, good, sound advice. Now our enemies, camping hard against the ships, kindle their watchfires round us by the thousands. What soldier could warm to that? Tonight's the night that rips our ranks to shreds, or pulls us through. The troops hung on his words and took his orders. Out they rushed, the sentries in armour, forming under the son of Nestor, Captain Thrasymedes. Under Ascalaphus, Ialminus, sons of Ares, under Meriones, Apharius, and Iiparus, under the son of Creon, trusty Lycomedes. 7 chiefs of the guard, 100 under each, fighters marching, grasping long spears in their hands, took up new positions between the trench and rampart. There they lit their fires. Each man made his meal. Meanwhile, Marshal Agamemnon led his commanders, a file of senior chiefs, towards his own lodge, and set before them a feast to please their hearts. They reached out for the good things that lay at hand. But when they had put aside desire for food and drink, the old man began to weave his counsel among them. Nestor was first to speak. From the early days his plans and tactics always seemed the best. With good will to the chiefs he rose and spoke. "Great Marshal Atrides, Lord of men Agamemnon, with you I will end, my king, with you I will begin, since you hold sway over many warriors, vast armies, and Zeus has placed in your hands the royal scepter and time-honoured laws, so you will advise them well. So you above all must speak your mind, and listen, and carry out the next man's counsel, too, whenever his spirit leads him on to speak for the public good. Credit will go to you for whatever he proposes. Now, I will tell you what seems best to me. No one will offer a better plan than this. The plan I still retain, and I've been forming well for a good long while now, from the very day that you, my illustrious king, infuriated Achilles. You went and took from his tents the girl, Briseis, and not with any applause from us. Far from it. I, for one, I urged you against it, strenuously. But you gave way to your overbearing anger, disgraced a great man the gods themselves esteem. You seized his gift of honour, and keep her still. But even so, late as it is, let us contrive to set all this to rights, to bring him round with gifts of friendship and warm, winning words. And Agamemnon, the lord of men, consented quickly.
That's no lie, old man. A full account you give of all my acts of madness. Mad, blind I was. Not even I would deny it. Why, look, that man is worth an entire army. The fighter Zeus holds dear with all his heart. How he exalts him now, and mauls Achaea's forces. But since I was blinded, lost in my inhuman rage, now at last I am bent on setting things to rights. I'll give a priceless ransom paid for friendship. Here, before you all, I'll name in full the splendid gifts I offer. 7 tripods, never touched by fire. 10 bars of gold, 20 burnished cauldrons, 12 massive stallions, racers who earn me trophies with their speed. He is no poor man who owns what they have won, not strapped for goods with all that lovely gold. What trophies those high-strung horses carried off for me! 7 women I'll give him, flawless, skilled in crafts, women of Lesbos, the ones I chose, my privilege, that day he captured the Lesbos citadel himself. They outclassed the tribes of women in their beauty. These I will give, and along with them will go the one I took away at first, Briseus's daughter. And I will swear a solemn, binding oath in the bargain. I never mounted her bed, never once made love with her. The natural thing for mankind, men and women joined. Now, all these gifts will be handed him at once. But if later the gods allow us to plunder the great city of Priam, let him enter in when we share the spoils. Load the holds of his ship with gold and bronze, as much as his heart desires, and choose for his pleasure 20 Trojan women, second only to Argive Helen in their glory. And then, if we can journey home to Achaean Argos, pride of the breasting earth, he'll be my son by marriage. I will even honour him on a par with my Orestes, full grown by now, reared in the lap of luxury. 3 daughters are mine in my well-built halls, Chrysothemis and Laodice, and Iphianassa. And he may lead away whichever one he likes, with no bride price asked, home to Peleus's house. And I will add a dowry, yes, a magnificent treasure, the likes of which no man has ever offered with his daughter. 7 citadels I will give him, filled with people, Cardamyle, Enope, and the grassy slopes of Hyre, Phere the sacrosanct, and Theodepean meadows, rolling Epeia, and Pedasus green with vineyards. All face the sea at the far edge of sandy Pylos, and the men who live within them, rich in sheep flocks, rich in shambling cattle, will honour him like a god, with hordes of gifts, and beneath his sceptre's sway live out his laws in sleek and shining peace. All this I would extend to him if he will end his anger. Let him submit to me. Only the god of death is so relentless. Death submits to no one. So mortals hate him most of all the gods. Let him bow down to me. I am the greater king. I am the elder born, I claim. The greater man.
Nestor, the noble charioteer, embraced his offer.
Generous Marshal Atrides, Lord of men Agamemnon, no one could underrate these gifts of yours, not now. The treasure trove you offer Prince Achilles. Come, we'll send a detail of picked men. They'll go to Achilles' tent with all good speed. Quick, whomever my eye will light on in review, the mission's theirs. And old Phoenix first. Zeus loves the man, so let him lead the way. Then giant Ajax and tactful royal Odysseus. Heralds, Odysseus and Eurybates, you escort them. Water for their hands. A reverent silence now, a prayer to Zeus. Perhaps he'll show us mercy.
The brisk commands he issued pleased them all. Heralds brought the water at once and rinsed their hands, and the young men brimmed the mixing bowls with wine, and tipping first drops for the god in every cup, they poured full rounds for all. Libations finished, each envoy having drunk to his heart's content, the party moved out from Atrides' shelters. Nestor, the old driver, gave them marching orders, a sharp glance at each, Odysseus most of all.
"Try hard now. Bring him round, invincible Achilles."
So Ajax and Odysseus made their way at once, where the battle lines of breakers crash and drag, praying hard to the god who moves and shakes the earth, that they might bring the proud heart of Achilles round with speed and ease. Reaching the Myrmidon shelters and their ships, they found him there, delighting his heart now, plucking strong and clear on the fine lyre, beautifully carved, its silver bridge set firm,
he won from the spoils when he razed the Eetion city. Achilles was lifting his spirits with it now, singing the famous deeds of fighting heroes. Across from him, Patroclus sat alone, in silence, waiting for Aeacus's son to finish with his song. And on they came, with good Odysseus in the lead, and the envoys stood before him. Achilles, startled, sprang to his feet, the lyre still in his hands, leaving the seat where he had sat in peace. And seeing the men, Patroclus rose up too, as the famous runner called and waved them on.
"Welcome! Look, dear friends have come our way. I must be sorely needed now. My dearest friends in all the Achaean armies, even in my anger."
So Prince Achilles hailed and led them in, sat them down on settles with purple carpets, and quickly told Patroclus, standing by,
"Come, a bigger wine bowl, son of Menoetius, set it here. Mix stronger wine, a cup for the hands of each guest. Here beneath my roof are the men I love the most."
He paused. Patroclus obeyed his great friend, who put down a heavy chopping block in the firelight, and across it laid a sheep's chine, a fat goat's, and the long back cut of a full-grown pig marbled with lard. Automedon held the meats, while lordly Achilles carved them into quarters, cut them well into pieces, pierced them with spits, and Patroclus raked the hearth, a man like a god making the fire blaze. Once it had burned down, and the flames died away, he scattered the coals, and stretching the spitted meats across the embers, raised them onto supports, and sprinkled clean, pure salt. As soon as the roasts were done, and spread on platters, Patroclus brought the bread, set it out on the board in ample wicker baskets. Achilles served the meat. Then, face to face with his noble guest Odysseus, he took his seat along the farther wall. He told his friend to sacrifice to the gods, and Patroclus threw the first cuts in the fire. They reached out for the good things that lay at hand, and when they had put aside desire for food and drink, Ajax nodded to Phoenix. Odysseus caught the signal, filled his cup, and lifted it towards Achilles, opening with this toast.
"Your health, Achilles! We have no lack of a handsome feast, I see that, either in Agamemnon's tents, the son of Atreus, or here and now, in yours. We can all banquet here to our heart's content. But it's not the flowing feast that is on our minds now, no. A stark disaster, too much to bear. Achilles, bred by the gods, that is what we are staring in the face, and we are afraid. All hangs in the balance now, whether we save our benched ships or they're destroyed, unless, of course, you put your fighting power in harness. They have pitched camp right at our ships and rampart, those brazen Trojans. They and their far-famed allies. Thousands of fires blaze throughout their armies. Nothing can stop them now, that's their boast. They'll hurl themselves against our blackened hulls, and the son of Cronos sends them signs on the right. Zeus's fireboats flashing, and headlong Hector,